Good evening, planet Earth. Good evening, planet Earth. Yeah, it is the Planetary Status Report, and my name is Dan, that's D-A-N, and my last name's Sullivan. It's no secret to the Central Intelligence Agency. I'm kidding, that's paranoid talk. It's no secret to the Credit Bureau. It's no secret to the ones that measure your credit score, which is really in many ways your financial member. Remember, no foul language. No foul language on the radio. No foul language. No foul language on the radio. You use a bad word or lewd language. What does lewd mean? Because you can't use the bad words, and I know I talked about this on last week's Planetary Status Report, reporting to you from Seattle, whatever that means. Planet Earth, Sector 28.Z on your FM dial. F for friend, M for me, right? It might be Tuesday, March the 23rd, 2021, right around 10:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, right where I'm at here in Seattle. It might be. But if you're listening to me on 5950 kilohertz from the WRMI studio in Miami, then it's 11 p.m. on Saturday. That's March the 27th, 2021, Boblimtok. Yes, it is also March the 27th, Boblimtok, the year of the hyperspace, the year of the monkey whale of the ancient people that lived under the sea before there was a sky. Okay. Okay. 5950 kilohertz, WRMI. 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, roughly Boblimtok. Saturday, March the 27th, no foul language. And if you're interested in the information that I talk about in these broadcastorial infusorium adventures through the space of radio transmit technology, if you're interested in understanding how crazy I get, then all you have to do is go to dfgtc.org/show notes. That's right, dfgtc.org/show notes, and then just pick the right date, which would technically be today, which is not, well, it is. For you, it's March the 27th. That's the show notes you want to use. Or show notes number 2, but just go for the date. You know what I mean? I'm new to radio. They weren't supposed to let me on radio. They said if I went on radio, I'd do a bad thing. The nuns told me that if I ever went on radio, I'd probably destructo force the universal conglumptaglimpt. The nuns said that when the great Boblimtok spread forth across the seas of onion rings and French fry holidays, the nuns said that you would be forsaken before all the whales. The whales would toss you about like a Nerf football. The coyotes would seek you out for your, you know, specialized flesh. If you know what I mean. If you know 420, right? I was told a great many things if I went on the radio. I was told that the internet destroyed the world. I was told that there would be a time when humans would seek out humans for nothing but their own flesh. But no foul language. One hopes. No foul, accursed language, if you're going to think about the people of the ancient times. This morning, I had a really cool podcast with a friend of mine. He's a cool dude. He lives in Seattle. The link to the podcast is in the show notes. That's dfgtc.org/show notes. The link's in there. All I'll say about it is it deals with a war game scenario. It is a hypothetical. It is fiction. It is not the real world. Think of it like that event 201 that Bill Gates did and no one ever arrested him for. It's like that, but, you know, much lower rent because we're not billionaires. I don't have a Boblimtok dollar, do you? I don't have a silver, ancient, golden, diamond dollar filled with emerald spectacularity. I don't have those things because I live on planet reality. Yeah, a reala hippopotamus. And on planet reala hippopotamus, all the creatures seek you out for whatever they think they can use. That's it. Anyways, this particular podcast I did with my friend is pretty interesting. It is a war game scenario podcast. It is based upon sort of that process you go through, I think, in intelligence preparation, the battlefield, where you're brainstorming sort of, you're asking basic questions. What's the layout? What's available? What can we do? How do we solve this? What can we do to solve this problem? So if you're interested, the title of the podcast is The Liberation of Krasnovia. The title of the podcast, as I drink some water, I apologize. The title of the podcast is The Liberation of Krasnovia. So yeah, if you are interested, I think you'll enjoy it. Next topic. You see how we're burning through the topics now? My friends out there in Bo Blimp Talk, no foul language, Reala Hippopotamus. You're out there, I know you are. You might be in the ionosphere. You might be battling at 20 miles up in giant super zeppelins. Super zeppelins that use vacuum ship technology. Super zeppelins that have ion drives. You might be up there in the ionosphere, battling out against all the armies of the inner earth and the outer earth and the outer limits, if you like that show. Next topic. So tomorrow is my birthday. Happy birthday, Dan. Happy birthday, Bo Blimp Talk. Congratulations to you, Bo Blimp Talk. It is my birthday. I will be 7,987 klen old, according to my ancient calendar. It is my Forbic womb time tomorrow, where I reconnect with the juices and the oils and the greases of creation, where the waxing and the waning of those beautiful, you know, crimson, the crimson valleys from which the fruit shall spring. Tomorrow is my Forbic womb time, when mystic slime gave birth to a rhyme. Pal. I will peer into my scrotal magic. I'll sense whales and discuss what's tragic. My brain will connect to Bukowski's orphan pooch. I'll drink hooch, the slutty, cursed, excremental whoredom sauce Bukowski left behind. I'll drink hooch, the slutty, cursed, excremental whoredom sauce Bukowski left behind. And for my listeners, Charles Bukowski is an American writer of the mid to late 20th century. He wrote a great book called Factotum. If you want to read a book that comes close to describing how my brain works, read Factotum. It works. Next topic. No. Anyways, tomorrow's my birthday, and I will be 51 years old. And at the end of the note to the podcast, there's always a link to PayPal. And if you want to fund the weedery and the drinkery and the foodery of a 51-year-old man who's peering into the abyss within the womb, the dark womb of Seattle, not the good womb, not the Forbic womb time, but the dark, dismal, greasy, nasty, razor blade covered womb of Seattle. You can save me from it for pennies a day. You can save me from the dark womb of Seattle, brothers and sisters. You can save me. Think of me as your existential Sally Struthers. For pennies a day, you can save this Bo Blimp Talk. You can fund me with cocaine and hookers in outer space, Spain. You can allow me to travel beyond the edges of the here and now. I'll go to Mars. I'll raise the cow. And then I'll go to Jupiter. I'll see what Europa's all about. Yeah, that's right. Next topic. Anyways, tomorrow I'm 51. Big frickin' deal. I think Walter White died when he was 52. I kind of like that guy's style. I know he's fictional. And I know he was kind of, you know, he wasn't really a Christian, but I think Nietzsche would have appreciated Walter White. I think Friedrich Nietzsche would have really appreciated Walter White and probably maybe even Ayn Rand. Like, I like Walter White as a character, but he is flawed from a Christian perspective. Like, he does have some issues with the whole revenge thing. He likes his revenge. He likes his power. On the other hand, the Old Testament and some of the New Testament is filled with some of that too, mostly the Old Testament. Revenge, power and revenge. Power and revenge, man, that's a big part of the Old Testament. At least as far as the histories go, the chronicles and the histories. The philosophical parts of the Old Testament actually are very different. But as far as the histories go, power and revenge. The kingdom of Israel, power and revenge. So actually, Walter White would have totally been a king of Israel. If you've read your Bible and you understand what I just said, Walter White would have totally fit in with most of those dudes who rose to power after, you know, 1 Samuel chapter 8. Wasn't that great? It's like, hey, can we have a king? Kings will enslave you and treat you like crap and yeah, but they're fancy and they're colorful and they promise us credit cards. Yeah, frickin' kings. They promise us a Norwegian buffet. That's what they promise us. With great fried chicken, Indiana style. Next topic, right? So, I don't know. I'm not going to talk about the mask thing. I might be moving soon. I think that's important for me to mention. I might be going someplace else. Now, I don't want to give away too much, and I don't want to say with certainties. Let's talk about the great discontinuity. And if you don't know what it is, I have a podcast on my blog. If you just search for the word discontinuity, I know it's old schooly, but I got the MP3. You can just download it. The point is, in the great discontinuity, the only real certain thing is uncertainty. And I know that sounds ridiculous and almost circular, but it's not. If you can imagine history boiling, like maybe throughout periods of equilibrium, history's mostly slowly cooling or slowly thawing. You know, it just kind of like heats a little, cools a little, maybe you get some cracks, but the thing is still there. It's still there. Like the, you know, like the Roman Empire. It had entropy, it had issues, but for the most part, there was the basic crickly spine of that ice that was still there that represented the Roman Empire. But then at the back end and at the front end, at the beginning and the end, you have a lot of chaos when history boils. And I think history is boiling right now. I think that one way to look at history is that it's in a state of high entropy. And so when I say I might be moving soon, Bo Blimp Doc, I should trademark that, but I'm sure somebody already owns it, which means I'll be sued soon in the trial courts of Bo Blimp Doc. These are the courts where actual, like, half-dolphin kangaroos judge you. And it's really horrific, Bo Blimp Doc. Even worse than the orangutans that have laser beam eyes, Bo Blimp Doc. foul language. Remember that. Nothing's guaranteed. And no one is being held accountable. Hrungus lords fled the Trumbull sect in Yogic 784 before the Clan Masters etched out time into units of stone and pain. King Vrug led the last army of the Transcendental Space Knights in search of a golden shower. That had hot and cold running death. It had hot and cold running death, that shower. Oh, yeah, that wasn't good. Queen Olga, with her brazen mimicry, gave her brother the laser arm and the swollen brain of Prince Throg. It was bad. It was mad. She fled the fog. I was flogged. This land has people covered in ancient morbid dust. This land has young men walking in white shirts and screaming at the sky. This land will fly, and if I die, this land will dump me in the hole with the coal left behind by those ancient space dukes who were high on liquid plasma cocaine. Liquid plasma, galaxy cocaine. Okay, next topic. I am moving soon. I know that was a very cryptic way to describe an adventure or a trip through a place and a time, not a time tunnel. I'm going to drink a little water. I wish I could build a time tunnel. What I would do with a time tunnel, if it was an adjustable time tunnel, if I had a time tunnel that could, you know, actually what I really want is a time zeppelin. I want a zeppelin that can travel 20 miles up, powered by a powerful ion drive. It'll have a magazine of super missiles. It'll carry railgun cannon. That's right. In fact, that's what I really want for my birthday. I would like to have a time zeppelin. I wish I could have a space-time zeppelin. I know that people think I'm insane. Frankly, and you know, Jim gave me a quote once, and this is my friend Jim Davidson, so. And if you want to learn about him, you can go to igloo-luau.com. He has a lot of essays on igloo-luau.com. And if you want to learn about his current projects, go to freedomlanddao.com. That's freedomlanddao.com. com. And yeah, he and I talked about the Saturn V rocket once. And I think he told me, and I don't want to misquote, so I'm sure he'll beat me up if we do a podcast together, which is supposed to happen on Saturday. Maybe. It doesn't have to. Things change. But the next podcast we do, he might beat me up. But I think he once told me that roughly in the first 10,000 feet, 50% of the fuel, the energy, the fuel that powered the whole rocket, if you took all of it like a pie chart, half of it was spent for the first 10,000 feet. And you could say, well, Dan, why is that a big deal? Because I think with material science, we could probably float a decent-sized missile to about 20 miles, and then you turn on the rocket. And what does that give you? Well, I'll tell you one thing it gives you. It allows you to optimize the nozzle for the vacuum. So instead of trying to like figure out, well, what's the most efficient nozzle for every fucking level of atmosphere? And there was a solution. NASA had a solution. It was called Aerospike. Aerospike would have worked. If you want to fire a bullet in a swimming pool, fine. Do Aerospike. Aerospike would have worked. But if you're not doing Aerospike, you end up trying to optimize these rocket nozzles. And it may sound like a small thing, brothers and sisters, but when it comes to the nature of how a rocket works, it is not that complicated in a way. It's a combination of mass and velocity. Mass, the amount of material being expelled, and the velocity of that material. Those two things together, basically, are providing you with the ability to go faster and faster. That's how a rocket engine works. You know, stick a firecracker under a can. You have a moment of expansion of gas and energy. And that energy gets expelled out of the can. It gets directed. And that mass of gas has both velocity and its mass and velocity. It has force. It has momentum. It drives that Newtonian, you know, every action has an equal and opposite. You know what, babies and sisters, brothers and babies, humans and whatever, crocodile. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Yeah. And so, anywho, I don't know why we don't build launching stations at 20 miles. I feel like we've got the tech to do it. And here's another thing, too. You say, well, Dan, you have to use hydrogen and you'll explode. Let me explain something. At 20 miles, you're in a near vacuum. Pretty freaking close. In fact, so close that if your hydrogen bubble opened up, there is probably not a very high chance you'd get an explosion. Okay, there's just not a lot of oxygen at 20 miles. Okay, that's how I solved that problem. It is more or less a vacuum almost. If you've ever seen that Red Bull jump the guy did from 23 miles, he was in a space suit. He went up in a space capsule. Okay, he did. You know, that capsule probably was pretty close to being rated for orbit. Not for re-entry. Re-entry is its own problem, brothers and sisters. And that's another thing about taking a lighter-than-air approach to rocketry. If you're really smart about it, like if you treat it like, okay, a space zeppelin, but a foldable one, where at altitude, you can fold the envelope that contained the hydrogen back into the spacecraft, but at the same time, you can use the hydrogen that you're pushing out as extra fuel, brothers and sisters. And so you could actually build a convertible Zeppelin that could have an optimized rocket engine, and that canopy, that envelope that lifted you to 20 miles could fold back into the ship. And in a vacuum, it's not really an issue of resistance anyways. It's mass. The resistance is not the issue in vacuum. So what if you can return from orbit, brothers and sisters, instead of like, I'm going to return from orbit at 50 billion boblimpdoc, what if instead of doing that, you gently expanded the envelope? You gently expanded the Zeppelin part of that thing. I mean, if you can imagine this, you could almost design it and it would almost look like a Zeppelin because the gondola would be the actual rocket ship. But the envelope carrying the hydrogen, that's your basically, excuse me, I just knocked the wall and I'm afraid I'm going to get in trouble. And I don't want to get too crazy, because if I get too crazy, they're going to send the The police Boblim talk. So anyways, if you can imagine like a Zeppelin and the gondola, or maybe a better example would be a blimp, but whatever you want to put in your head. The big bag that contains the lifting gas would be foldable in a sense. It would fold back into a compartment. But if you got near to a planet that had, you know, atmosphere and pressure, you could utilize that to actually gently transition into the atmosphere. Instead of, you know, hitting the atmosphere at bazillions of miles an hour, what if instead you gently descend, expanding that envelope? Yeah. It won't be terribly gentle, but it could be a lot more gentle than how we do it now. How we do it now is you're basically burning through the atmosphere at the speed of sound when you get right to the end. But at first, you're going thousands of miles an hour. Well, what if instead you simply slowed yourself down a bit, use some retro rockets to do this. You'd want to use some retros, but use some retro rockets and then you expand the envelope. Use the retros to slow you down and get you lower in the atmosphere, and then you open up the hydrogen and fill the envelope. And you have solar cells that can allow you to extract water from the high altitude to get more hydrogen, which means if you build this rocket ship right, in theory, it could fuel itself in the atmosphere. But everyone's going to say, oh, Dan, he's insane. You can't do that. You have to punch through the atmosphere like firing your Glock inside of your swimming pool that has a 12-foot, you know, diving zone. And what I'm saying is, why are we firing our bullets through lead? Why don't we use some common sense? You know, it's hard to imagine this, but the atmosphere is a fluid at high velocity. It really is. It behaves like a fluid. And we're trying to basically jam a rocket through it. We'd be way smarter and actually way more sensitive to the ecology if we simply floated the rocket to about 20 miles and then turn on the rocket engine. That's how we should do it. But I'm crazy. People will have me arrested. I've committed it's not really a birthday crime, because we have to remember the word. What did I call this thing? Moving closer to the Great Sea, where my mother exploded my inner region or something. My phorbic womb time. Yeah. I need to stop talking about the super space Zeppelin because it sounds crazy. And also, people say, oh, you've been hitting the wacky tabacky, and that's not it either, really. It's not tabacky. But I am a bit wacky tonight. I actually think it's a boost of dopamine from some news, from some decisions. You know, the problem with stress is that you stay in a moment and you don't resolve the stress. If fight or flight freezes, you start to die. I don't want to get all depressing, because that's why I didn't do the topic I was going to do. I was going to talk about psychological warfare, but I decided not to because I was in a good mood and I felt I'll save that for a day where I'm a bit more somber and a bit more, you know, downcast, you know, following the advice of my Russian language teacher. You know, if you're in the Soviet Union, in Kiev, you don't smile. They'll think you're crazy if you smile. And that's worked for me in Seattle in the last year when I'm not wearing the mask, because people will see me and I don't dress good and I look downcast. So they just, even though I'm not wearing a mask, I think that's one of the reasons why they don't fuck with me. You know? But I do think there's some inherent problems with the way that they do the rocketry. I think it's crazy. It would be way smarter to do the rocketry in the vacuum at 20 miles, almost the vacuum. And people will probably email me because this is shortwave, and they'll say, Dan, I know you call yourself the planetary status report, but aren't you being the Darth Vader of pain? Because you love, you know, SpaceX. You love the big silver rocket. But why don't you just go rent, what is it called? Destination Moon. I think it came out in 1950, Boblimtok, but I could be wrong. But it's an old school sci-fi, Destination Moon. rent Destination Moon or watch it on Netflix or get it off YouTube, but I'm telling you right now that his rockets look like 1950s rockets. They look kind of flimsy. They don't look realistic. And as far as that red car goes, if you understand the behavior of photons in a vacuum with respect to materials that can absorb photons and other forms of energy, you kind of get why you really don't want to paint things any color. You just want them to be reflective. And if you do have a black body, it's for purposes of managing some thermal need, like heating the ship, maybe. But you really want it mostly to be reflective or absorptive in a way that can convert to something like electricity. That's what you want. I don't know, people. Let's go to the next topic, because I feel like a lot of you shortwave hyperspace travelers, who I love, and God bless you for listening, might hate me for hating on, you know, Elon Musk and SpaceX, but I just think a lot of it looks like flimsy bullshit. And I do think we get fed a lot of shit about outer space. Does that mean I know what outer space is? No. That's why I want to build my space zeppelin, because even if there isn't an outer space, if you can convert yourself into your rocket boblimpdoc, once you get up to like 25 miles, you can basically go smile really fast. Just like Terry, that girl you met in New York City. Just like that girl you met in Boblimpdoc Town, where the people would wrestle the crazy pig, and they would take out the terriers and the farriers. They would go into the sewers looking for the crazed people, the people that got lost. The people that got lost and were left behind in the sewers. They had to live off of things you can't imagine in those sewers. Have you heard of the Chud? The cannibalistic humanoid underground dweller Boblimpdoc? That's right. Yeah, I'm a bit crazy tonight. I don't know. I think it's a dopamine surge. It could be a stroke. I haven't really exercised enough, so that's one of the reasons why, if I can escape this, it is a dystopia right now. People think I'm crazy when I describe Seattle like a dystopia, but it's a dystopia because it's filled with all kinds of psychological warfare and all kinds of just really demonic behavior. And if you're a Christian and you're sensitive to anything spiritual, you really do just want to get drunk. And it's what I've been doing most of this last year. And I'm not opposed to beer, folks. I like beer, but it should be in something called moderation. And the last year has just been every time I hear people coming up the stairs, I wonder if they're coming to kill me. The whole last year. Every fucking day. I'm on the fifth floor, so I figure if you're going to go up to the fifth floor, you mean business. That's the thought in my head. And I don't want to live in a world where those are the thoughts in your head that you expect someone or some group or something to come kill you. We live currently, And I'm not going to talk about this tonight so much, but we do live currently in the most extensive, ongoing, military, psychological warfare operation in human history. That is not, in my opinion, controversial for people who can still reason. We're living in that. And the COVID is the king of it, of course. And frankly, I kind of have to tip my hat to the PSYOPs team on the COVID thing. I sort of saw it coming. Like, if you listen to that discontinuity podcast, I'll talk about some monkey virus. And so you'll say, oh, well, that's interesting. And yeah, and I think I saw some of this coming, but I didn't see the scope of it for what it was going to be. And ultimately, I did think to myself that there was something dark hidden below it, and I still think there might be. Like, for all the fear, and there's a lot of fear, I don't have any real evidence yet, at least tangible evidence that there's anything wrong, with one exception, and that's the ecosystem here. I watch it, I'm sensitive to it, I'm the old dude staring out the window. There's been some weird stuff in the environment of Washington State when I do my whole compare and contrast to how I grew up, and I don't think that's unfair as a characterization, and weird stuff is mostly bad. You know, it's related to things like the salmon. It's related to things like not seeing worms. It's related to things like not seeing bugs splattered on windshields. And you can say, oh, Dan, that's crazy talk. And also, it's related to the fact that I do believe they're spraying something in the sky. And if you're interested in learning more about this, Dane Wigington has a YouTube channel, but he has a website, geoengineeringwatch.org. I think that's the right URL, but if I get it wrong, you could probably just put in Geoengineering Watch, and you'd probably get his link. And Dane Wigington, he's researched this. He's been impacted by it. A lot of people think this is BS, the whole issue around geoengineering. I have seen it. I got some nuclear, biological, chemical warfare training when I was in the military, so I understand still some of the things they taught us, and there's a huge difference between condensation and dispersal. Huge difference. And if you actually look up the words, if you look up the words in a dictionary, you can reason out the difference between condensation and dispersal. What you're seeing happening is called dispersal. It's become a dystopia. And when I was growing up, and maybe this is a good thing to talk about birthday stuff, because we're getting pretty close to the end, Bo Blimp Doc. And I do have links. If I don't get to the news stories, and there's a few of them, I've got some links to some news stories. I don't know if I call them happy or sad. They're more or less, here's what's going on in the world of Bo Blimp Doc type stories. I'll get some water here before I continue. I think I've been a kind of a dark soul since I was almost a baby. Some of my earliest memories have a lot of dark angles to them. And I don't think I'm some type of a sociopath or a psychopath. I don't want to harm anyone. In fact, one of the things that bugs me out and leads me to being a hermit is that when I feel this general spiritual energy of harm, I don't want to be around it. And I don't mean just physical harm. I mean psychological harm as well. I can't be around it. It has the darkest energy you can imagine. And it's everywhere right now. But if you were to talk to me, like 10-year-old Dan, sci-fi theater, I think it was KSTW Channel 11, sci-fi theater, Saturday afternoon, I believe. I think it was a double feature on Channel 11 in the Seattle area of Washington State, Bo Blimp Doc. Yeah, sci-fi theater. If you had interrupted me while watching some 1950s superworm that was swallowing people, and I was all freaked out because it was kind of creepy back then, and you know, you get used to like bad sci-fi special effects if you don't have better special effects. It's the Atari theory of this is the Atari theory of perception. I'm about to give you a curveball, and it's great. We can fill some time with that, right? Because you know, but yeah, the Atari theory of perception is based upon that Atari 2600 video game you might have played, like I did, like that adventure game where the dragons look like, you know, seahorses. Yeah, and you were a little cube, and basically the sword was kind of a cross, but the graphics weren't great. But here's the thing, we had imagination. In fact, Marshall McLuhan talked about this. He talked about hot and cold media. And if Marshall McLuhan was looking at Atari, he'd say, it's kind of a hot medium, because even though there's not a lot to it as far as its own energy goes, it turns on your brain. It's like the difference between radio and television. You know, radio for McLuhan is a hot medium. TV's a cool medium, because they affect the way you see the world differently, you know. So the general Atari theory of perception is based upon what you're given in that sense, as far as the perception goes. You fill in the blanks. When I was a kid, we had little adventures. We would go up to Little Mountain Store, and there was a Donkey Kong, Boblimp Donk, and we'd play Donkey Kong. And I will admit, I never had enough quarters given how badly I played, but I liked hanging out with my friends, you know? In fact, one of those guys I hung out with there, I've actually, you know, every once in a while I talk to him. I hope he's doing okay. I probably should call him. We should probably call people we care about, what, you know, when and how we can, no matter what time of life. This isn't about end of the world, folks. But guess what? Everybody's world does come to an end. It isn't about doomsday, because we all have a doomsday. We all have that. It's not about apocalyptic bullshit. Oh, crap. I'll have to bleep that out, Boblimp Doc. Remember, no foul language. Crap. Crap's okay. Crap's okay. Crap's okay. Crap's okay. I am sorry about that. If you talk to me in 1980, where we had the lower resolution special effects that, you know, where we had to use more of our imagination, or we had Donkey Kong, where we had to use more of our imagination, or Atari, if you talked to me back then and you said, what do you think the future is going to be? I might have had a dark view, because I had a dark view on things as a kid, but I might have said, I think it might be pretty cool. I think it'll be dangerous. And you know, I gotta say, guys, by definition, if you really meditate philosophically on what the future actually is, almost literally by definition, the future is dangerous. It always has been, because we all have the same destination as far as this physical life goes. I'm a Christian. When I die, I hope to go to heaven as far as my spirit goes. But this body, this thing I have right now, it's going to return to the earth. This isn't Eden. You know, we were kicked out of Eden. This is the in-between world. And in the in-between world, people die. We all have the same destination. But here's the deal, though. If you'd asked me in 1980, or better yet, I think 82, when I think it was 82 when I saw Escape from New York, Kurt Russell. If you'd asked me, what's the future going to be? I'd say it's going to be a little bit crazy. But it's going to be cool. I would have still said that. But there was a movie I saw. There's a couple movies I saw that actually gave me a dark vision. That kind of sick feeling in your stomach is a lot like falling in love, but not good. One of those movies was THX 1138. If you've never seen THX 1138, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. I believe George Lucas may have worked on that one. Actually, may have been Spielberg. But the point is, I think it was Lucasfilm, actually. Yeah. That film, in many ways, represents a vision of the future that this current future seems to be moving towards if certain people get their way. It looks like it. But there is also another movie I saw back in the 80s called Brazil. Terry Gilliam. And if you've never seen the movie Brazil, I don't care if it's the director's cut or the non-director's cut, that's totally up to you. But Blimp Doc, no foul language. No foul language. But yeah, Brazil is an amazing film. And it does describe many of the features of not just the present, but the world that developed and grew and came into existence, I would say, starting with the first Gulf War. That there's this ugly super state that was probably always there. Like if you ask an anarchist like myself, woohoo, you're all going to hate me now. Send me hate mail. That's me@iamsully.com. Remember my PayPal. If you're going to hate on me, pay me $5. I might even, you know what? If I figure it out, it's your email, I might still say thank you. And you can still say mean stuff and pay me, but pay me the appropriate amount. I'm not a cheap hooker. I'm not there yet. If you'd asked me at any point in the 80s, before certain points, before things like seeing the movie Brazil, which I'm not going to give away. You watch it. I'm not going to give away THX 1138. You should see these films. I do believe these films contain some description of this hell that we're in, this earthly hell, lowercase hell, but the current beast system that seems to be surrounding us. And I know people are going to think I'm crazy. And you know something? I have learned to accept the moniker, the description, the nom de guerre of crazy, because this happens to people. This is what happens at this point in human history. If you believe in God, if you read the Bible, Christians will actually turn on each other. And it shouldn't happen. Nobody wants it to happen, but it is in prophecy. And I also think my friend Jim is right. I think that we could make choices. I believe the Lord gave us free will. We're not doomed in that sense. We can make choices. We can save ourselves. I think we can save the environment. I think we can treat nature with more respect. I think if we lived in a free world, that would almost happen by necessity, because most people, in my opinion, are actually good. But the circumstances they're put into, the Skinner boxes, the manipulation, the Temple Grandin abattoir of channels and funnels and curves so people can't see what's happening until it's already happened. That's the world we're in. And it is troubling, and it is something that I wonder about. Like, do I have potentially good news right now? In my heart, I don't think God would lead me astray in such a way. I think that he led me away from one thing I'm not going to talk about, because you should never taunt demons. Here's some advice. Sometimes you'll run into an actual demon. I am sorry. I'm going to tell you this right now. It's happened to me. And one of the worst things you can do with demons is taunt them. And one of the ways of taunting a demon is to name them or say how you met them or where you met them. All I'm going to tell you is you don't taunt demons. But I do believe the Lord turned me away from one once. And I do believe I struggle with other personal demons. You could say the sins of the body. I drink too much beer. I hope I drink less, near the people who live in the great range near the swamp creatures. The swamp creature land. Is that a riddle? Is that a hint? Can you figure out where I'm going? I might be going to, I don't know. I was going to say, I'm not going to say it. You know something? I think I swore once at 45 minutes. I used foul language. I think I used BS. And I got to say, I wonder if that's actually terrible in the context of the FCC guidelines for vaporization. Because I heard if you swear too much, they just vaporize you with a space laser. That's right. If you currently with the FCC, if you are transmitting messages with foul language or lewd descriptions, there's a space laser. Powered by muskrat love. You guys were young once too, right? Or you might still be young. I didn't think I'd feel this old, but I feel as if I was either left behind or I was hurtled too far forward. And I know I'm not alone. I know a lot of you guys kind of feel that way. And if you're listening to me on shortwave and the frequencies aren't coming through, I would say that we do feel this way. We can feel it in each other. I think the spirit world, or if you want to call it that, the ethereal realm, the veil, if you want to call it the realm of the mind, we do sense each other's pain. And so if we tune into that, which is hard, we can sense what's going on. But a lot of people tune into their, you know, smart device, and I don't think it makes you smarter, but I am deathly certain it is a device. And it might be a dog collar. Yeah. It might be a dog collar. If you enjoy this podcast, I do have other podcasts, and they are in the notes, you know, in links. You can get there through the notes to the podcasts that are out there. And you can go to iamsully.com, and you can go to show notes at dfgtc.org/show notes. You do need to keep in mind, in my podcast, I do use foul language, and I do use lewd descriptions, okay? Maybe I should work on that. I know I've had at least one person I know who said I might do better if I didn't swear so much. But on the other hand, it is not who I am. I'm sorry. I've kind of always had a foul mouth, and it goes back to when I was a kid. And if I'm going to say, am I proud? Am I ashamed? I don't even know how to answer that question. To me, these are just words. It troubles me that we are so troubled by them. It troubles me that we're okay with vaporizing a village someplace, but we are afraid of words. That is troubling, if you want to know what troubling is. It's troubling to me that we've watched the Bill of Rights get, you know, turned to a cinder, burned to ash. But we're afraid of words. And those two things are actually related. You know, I don't think the Founding Fathers were afraid of words. And I think they called each other terrible names for the time, whatever the fashion was. I think they used to call people what? Oh my, what was one of the things they call each other? A hermaphrodite? Okay, actually, hermaphrodite's a thing. It isn't a bad thing. But back in the day, they would use that as an insult. Is it good? Is it bad? You know what, guys? It's language. It's language. The human race was not always afraid of language. And yet, in the last few decades, a theory, a philosophy, a general conception, and I'm not going to blame postmodernism because, frankly, some of their writers are quite beautiful. And actually, I like some of the Derrida I read. But the fact is, there's this general ethos that's been spread, that language is so flawed that all we can do is put language in a concentration camp. And what I would hope is that we have the courage to not do that. And yet that seems to be what we've done precisely, exactly. We've taken the human creativity that is in language and we've done that. And it's, you know what? Ask hip-hop people, ask rap artists who worked in the 90s, ask them about the whole Tipper Gore thing. They know fully well exactly what I'm talking about in a way that I don't know. They were afraid of language back then. It's not really a new thing. It's simply gone to hyperspace. You know, we used to be afraid of certain words. Now we're afraid of almost every word. And next year, the Newspeak dictionary will be this thick. Because we're afraid of language. Anyways, if you want to donate to my podcast, you can go to www.paypal.com/paypalme/Dr. Freckles. That is www.paypal.com/paypalme/Dr. Freckles. That is Dr. Freckles. That's it. Like Dr. and Freckles. And if you want to contact me by email, it is me@imsully.com. And for those of you in hyperspace, transverse space, interstellar quasi-space, hyper transcendental interstellar hyperspatial memory. For those of you still in love, remember there's a monkey whale coming for you and your family. There's a giant worm in the backyard. And there are aliens battling at 20 miles in space zeppelins with ion drives. Goodbye.